Hi, this is Hugh McKellar of RealCiderReviews.com, based in Sydney, Australia, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 59.
Ho, ho, ho!
Ho, 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 and welcome to a Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, where we speak to cider makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, I have a very special chat with Hugh McKellar from Real Cider Reviews. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. If you didn't get to listen to last week's chat with Eric Bordelais, I'd like to encourage you to do so. That was the second part of a two-part series when I was in Normandy visiting with Eric this past September. The Nose and I were there, and this particular chat, part two, we had a walk amongst ancient pear trees. And ancient because I don't know too many people who have like 300 or 400 year old pear trees sitting in their backyard. That is just wiggy wiggy stuff, but really cool. And I've been posting the photos there on the show notes. That was episode 58. Check that out if you can. And then I also want to assure people that there are a number of chats coming up. So if you've been kind of like thinking, where are those recordings from Spain? Rhea, you went to Asturias. What up? Well, I want to tell you, they are in the queue, and I'm just trying to, you know, catch my own tail here and get all the editing done. So this is only a weekly podcast at this point, and, you know, we're doing the best we can. And all things considered, I think we're doing pretty swell. So tip of the glass to you, Ciderville, and let's keep it rolling. One of the things I want to be rolling is I want to be rolling out this barrel. And I did put a call out for barrel expertise. And I want to be a little bit more specific on that. I would like to speak to somebody out there in Ciderville who actually makes barrels. Doesn't just, and it's not just, but not only uses barrels for cider making, but actually builds barrels. Do you call it building or crafts a barrel? That would be somebody, if you're in France, I guess you'd be the oaker. And if you are in the U.S., we used to call it the cooperage. And the nearest place I know is kind of a historical educational center in Massachusetts called Sturbridge Village. And I understand that there's somebody there who does some barrel making. But that's what I'm looking for, specifically a barrel maker, not only someone who is doing that with cider. So if you know that, please do send a tip my way, and you can send that to Rhea@ciderchat.com. I'm wondering who out there in Ciderville is going to be attending the United States Association of Cider Makers Trade Conference. It's called CiderCon, and that's going to be taking place in February. It's a three-day event that starts on the 8th, a Wednesday, and goes through the 10th. And the 10th will end with a toast and closing with the French cider makers in attendance. And there's an opportunity to meet with the alcohol and tobacco trade group that really oversees the whole scene for cider and alcohol in the U.S. There's a lot of workshops on Wednesday morning. There's like orchard care. Not to mention, you get to hang out with all the men and women making cider in the U.S. from a very artisanal level to a more corporate level, all with the same goal of bringing a good glass of cider to you and I. So that's going to be taking place, and I am going to be attending that. Can't wait. I have a podcast coming up with Brian Rutzman of the Northmen in Chicago. So Brian and I are going to be talking about, you know, how to maneuver around Chicago and getting us all jazzed up for that. So that's going to go live in January. Can't wait for that. And then the other thing that is also taking place in conjunction with CiderCon, that ends on the 10th, and on the 11th is the Chicago Cider Summit. and that's run by a man by the name of Alan Shapiro, who's full in on cider. It'll take place at the Navy Pier, and I'm going to have a link to the show notes in both of those events. One of the fun things that's going to happen at the Cider Summit is that I will be there. I'm going to have a little table, have my recorder, and we're going to be doing some live recordings with the attendees. Really excited to meet everyone in Illinois, which is the state that Chicago sits in. It's almost like Chicago is its own state. And I know that it's like a foodie heaven. So we're going to like warm up the city in February and just take it on in that good cider way. So looking forward to that. If you're heading there and you'd like to have a chat, or you're already there and you want to have a chat or a meetup, let's do it. I'm queuing up some already, and I do have kind of a limit that I could handle before I start like, oh, I can't think clear anymore. But I would love to chat with you if it fits in. On both sides. So again, just send me a email, ria@ciderchat.com. Let's next move on to this chat with Hugh McKellar from Real Cider Reviews. Though based in Australia, I really feel that Hugh is looking at the world of cider much like I do on Cider Chat. And that's one of the reasons why I always enjoy seeing what he has to say about the newest cider or what's happening in his spot of Ciderville. I do recommend checking out his website. It's broken down to latest cider reviews. Then there's news, finding a real cider. He's also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just a few weeks ago, Hugh reached out to me and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a Christmas cider book recommendation podcast episode, you know, for the holidays coming up here? And it took me what I would say a New York minute, or less than a New York minute, really a New York second, to say, yes, let's do it. Yes, please. So don't you know, we did. And we just recorded it this week, and I'm going live with it just a couple days later. So it's hot off the cider press. And I had a good time. You know, talking to Hugh was interesting because I saw a little glimpse into his studio when he put a photo up on Instagram. And I was like, wow, his studio, meaning his desk where he records, kind of like I do off of our laptops. And I was thinking, dang, that is really a clean looking desk there, Hugh. Good job. In the meanwhile, well, I'm going to be putting a photo up too, so you can see what my desk looks like. A little more, let's say there's been a lot of cider up here. It took me two bottles of the Argolette of Eric Bordelais to get through both part one and part two, and I wasn't really sharing too much of that with anybody. oh boy. So we chatted away, and I decided to call this episode the three top books for gift giving this year. And we have that listed. There's going to be links in the show notes where you can find where to get these books. Some will be familiar, some may not. And I'll also say that all of these are listed on the ciderchat.com/resource page. There's a lot of Apple books that, I mean, I'm just kind of touching upon the iceberg here with Hugh today, or we are touching upon the tip of the iceberg. However, despite all that, it's always a fun time to be chatting it up with another cider geek. So without further ado, let's get a little bit of holiday cheer on and grab our glasses and maybe a couple bottles too and join this chat with Hugh McKellar of Real Cider Reviews in Sydney, Australia. Hugh and I, like all cider folks, all began with, well, how's the weather in your part of the world?
It's been pretty hot the last few days, but luckily last night we've had a bit of a storm come through, so it's started to cool down a little bit. But yeah, coming into summer, it's going to get hot and sweaty.
That's what's a little bit mind-boggling for me, is that you're in summer and I'm entering winter. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife's from Scotland, so it's taken her a few years to get used to Aussie summers, and especially Christmases here in, you know, 35-degree heat.
Yeah. Just in case you're wondering, Ciderville, what 35 degrees Celsius means for Fahrenheit, well, that's 95 degrees, probably in the shade. I'm super, super duper psyched to be chatting with you. And let's bring Ciderville and everybody who might not have known about who you are, what you do, let's bring them up to date a little bit and just share with, you know, of course, you're based in Sydney, Australia, and it's now entering summer. But what are you doing in the cider world, and what got you into writing about cider to begin with?
Writing about cider for me, I have never really been a big beer drinker. So I spent a year in the UK and everyone else was drinking pints and I couldn't really handle a pint of ale. So I found at the time Magners was just starting to hit the shelves. But then I wanted to try some other ciders and there wasn't a whole lot of information out at the time. And when I got back to Australia, there was pretty well nothing out there. And at the time, the Australian craft cider scene was just starting to pick up. So I thought, well, why not write about it? So nearly 3 years later, the website's been slowly growing. And yeah, it's a good fun little hobby on the side.
And what do you do when you're not writing about cider?
I'm actually looking for a new job at the moment, so fingers crossed on that front. But normally I test software and help people use all different types of software and do customer support for tech startups.
Perfect. Well, all the folks out in Ciderville listening to that, if you know of any good leads for Mr. McKellar here, please send them his way. We're going to have all the links.
Thank you.
You bet. Hey, I'm really, really stoked to be talking with you. Let's talk, before we get into these books, because Hugh and I are going to be talking about some books that we're all jazzed up to share. But I want to just talk a little bit about Australia, because thanks to you and your, you know, advocating for Australian cider makers, you hooked me up with Sam Reed from Willie Smith's, and who's also the president of Cider Australia. So big tip of the glass to you. And there's a lot of stuff happening in Australia right now. Anything that you could like share with us about, well, just Australia in general. And then I want to ask you more specifically about Sydney.
Okay. A month or two ago, we had the Australian Cider Awards, and the amount of entrants were up. I think there was 60 extra varieties and products being entered compared to last year, and that's with even less international entrants. So the breadth and depth of cider makers in this country is just exploding at the moment. And the best thing about that is that not only are there more choices on the shelves, but the quality is improving year on year.
When you say there's more entrants, what was like the total number of entrants? Do you happen to know that offhand?
Oh, I think it was 250-ish entrants.
Mm-hmm. And that's all commercial cider makers.
I think anyone who sells I think the minimum you've got to be able to sell is about 10,000 litres a year.
And when you're out and about in your area of Sydney, how accessible is cider, real craft cider?
It's getting easier and easier. So within about a, let's say an hour's walk from my house, you'll hit six craft beer breweries. So there's a huge knowledge about craft beer in Sydney. And because of that, people are looking for that little bit of a palate cleanser on the side so they can have a couple of different beers and then have a cider. So all these great little craft beer pubs are popping up and they all have one or two really top shelf craft ciders in their fridge or on tap. So that's great for me, being able to try all these different ones so easily.
Is the craft ciders that you're seeing, are they of the style that it's purely the fresh pressed apple juice fermented natural or with a yeast, or are you seeing a lot of the, I'm going to classify it as innovation that we have in the U.S. where people are throwing all kinds of stuff from fruits to spices to hops in their cider? What's the range that you're seeing there?
Yeah, there are a few people experimenting with hops. There's a few people who also on their orchards grow a bit of raspberries and strawberries, so they're experimenting with those as well. But predominantly we're seeing either 100% apple juice ciders or a dash of pear juice in there as well. Obviously, we've got the big commercial players in town as well. There's just been some law reforms in terms of taxation, which should make it a little bit easier for the craft boys to compete against the big international guys. So, yeah, the scene's looking very positive here at the moment.
Yeah, I would say so. And are you a cider maker too? Do you make it, you know, on the side?
I've got a sneaky little batch in my garage at the moment. It's just aged enough, so it's actually, I'm just quietly pleased with how it's turned out.
And what are you doing with that? Is that a blend that you picked up at a local cider mill, or did you pick the apples yourself? How do you go about that in Sydney?
A little sneak peek of a forthcoming post on my blog. I've teamed up with a juice supplier out of Victoria, one of the southern states. They've sent me some 50% Granny Smith, 50% Pink Lady fresh juice. It's just been pasteurized, but fresh, no other additives apart from that. Then I fermented them with some Saison yeast, just as a bit of an experiment, and another batch with some champagne yeast, just so I can see how the different yeasts play. And yeah, hopefully I'll be writing about that sometime in the new year.
Lovely. I've worked with both of those yeasts myself, and though I'm not using either of them with a single variety cider I'm making right now called the Lady, but you're saying Pink Lady, and I have a Lady. I don't know. There's actually more ladies than we know out there in the world in the apple orchard.
Then you got the Granny Smith as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got the Granny Smith old lady as well.
Right. Yeah. So there's more gals than we know. You know, this again, I'm kind of like, you know, shaking in my seat because I'm so excited to be talking to you and really thrilled about all your writing and the blogging that you're doing. And I just want to mention again to Ciderville that you could check out on the show notes to this. This is going to be episode of 59, and you'll be able to see all the links to Hugh McKellar and his blog site, Real Cider Reviews, and what we're going to be talking about today. Now, Hugh, you reached out to me and said, hey, let's do a chat about some books, and especially with this holiday season coming up. I thought that was a fantastic idea. And you want to take it from there? What's the first book that you want to talk about on your end?
Okay, so I'm sure a lot of your fans have heard about this book, and if they haven't read it, they should definitely go out and have a read of it. It's called World's Best Ciders, Taste, Tradition, and Terroir from Somerset to Seattle. So this is written by Pete Brown and Bill Bradshaw. I believe you've had Bill Bradshaw on the podcast in the past.
That's right.
I was lucky enough to meet Bill at the Australian Cider Awards, who he was one of the guest judges. And so he very kindly signed this copy of the book. So the reason why I really like this book is the way it's been written. It's very accessible, easy to read. The photography in it, it's fantastic. And it was actually one of the big influences on my writing and actually really made me want to write about cider in a similar way.
The photographs are all by Bill, and then all the writing is done by Pete Brown. And I don't know, if you open, you probably have, do you happen to have your book in front of you right now?
Yes, I do.
So if you open up the cover photo, inside my cover photo, I have just a cacophony of apples that are all in a row of the different hues of red and green. Is that what you're seeing too on your inside, right inside the cover?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And then it goes with World's Best Cider. How many pages do we have in this book here?
It is 256.
Okay. Now, what grabbed you about this book? Because definitely I have a copy too. You know, I had Bill on the chat, and I'll do a link to the show notes on that. But what really brought you to this book? What do you like about it?
I like to see about how all the different regions have their own little quirks and little traditions about cider. Because I always thought that it's just the drink that came out of the deepest, darkest west country of the UK. But then I've learned all about the German ciders and the Canadian cider scene and the burgeoning Japanese cider scene. So that, for me, was quite interesting to see about how all those different traditions play and to see that how from one type of juice, basically, you can have such a wide range of products.
Definitely. And they are covering all the areas that you mentioned. In the table of contents, you know, it starts with like cider basics, which I thought was really good. And Pete Brown is just an absolutely amazing writer. And then it goes down into Planet Cider, which is the world of cider, and breaks it down to Europe, the Americas, Australia, and New Zealand. So I want to stop there for a minute. Australia and New Zealand. What do you think about the coverage in this book for Australia and New Zealand? Do you think they're missing some folks?
I think since the book was written, the cider market here has grown so much that, of course, they would have not got everyone that's around today. But they've done a pretty good job of hitting all the East Coast cider makers. There's a few really excellent labels in Western Australia at the moment who really don't get enough exposure just because it's just basically a different country over there. It's just so far away.
Mm. What part, like, you know, a lot of folks don't know how large Australia is. It's like the size of the continental United States, right? It's like 3,000 miles across.
Yeah.
So when you say the west...
Yeah, east to west, they're pretty comparable.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like that on the world map, but that's truly, I mean, it's gargantuous. So when you say that region, where specifically are you talking about there? Is that Melbourne?
On the west coast, right in the southern corner. So Melbourne is directly below Sydney. That's the mm-hmm. east coast.
Okay.
And Perth is over on the west.
Okay. All right. All right.
And Tasmania, where the Willie Smith's boys are from, that is right down in the southeast corner.
Okay, okay. How do you think it is for somebody traveling to your region for, like, doing some cider tourism? Is it doable? Or, you know, is it like saying, yeah, go to the United States and do cider tourism? I mean, really, literally, you have to pick one spot to go into. Is that... Your hit on it?
Realistically, you would only be able to explore maybe one region, depending on how long you've got to travel, obviously. But the local tourism boards of each of the states have done a really good job of promoting their region. So if you went to South Australia, Victoria, or Tasmania, they've designated cider trails, they call them. So you can follow the little brochure and hit five or six different cideries along some very picturesque areas.
Mm-hmm. That's why, going back to this book, I think it's a great resource because it lets you kind of pinpoint and select some of the key folks that they're looking at.
I mean, now that Bill's been out here and seen what Australia has to offer, I think he was suitably impressed with what was on show at the awards. So the people who they have got in here are the right people for the first edition book. But there are some young upstarts who are doing some very experimental things. Because Australia has this history of cider making in the last 10 years where we've only had eating apples to play with. So they've had to push all the other variables to try and make some excellent cider. So, you know, playing with different yeasts, playing with different maturation techniques. So now we're just starting to get a few proper Old English and Old French cider apples online. So now that they've got a full palette to play with, they're just going to go crazy in the next few years and have some really world-beating stuff coming out.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear everything that's happening in your spot of the world. It just speaks volumes for the history of your country with the Apple Isle and Tasmania. And I really look at Australians as a very innovative country overall. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. You know, getting back to this book again, the title is World's Best Ciders. And I think that, you know, when I look at a title of the book and I feel the cover, I just open it up and I think this is the perfect gift-giving book to give anyone because it has so many wonderful photos. Here in the U.S., if you go to like page 182 or 183, it starts with Steve Wood of Poverty Lane Orchards, and that's a Farnham Hill Orchards. You probably don't get any of that where you're at, but that, you know, Steve Wood and all the folks at Farnham Hill, they're really part of what was the beginning of the new cider scene here post-Prohibition. And this is something that I keep out on my book, my bookshelf, and also, you know, I bring it down when I'm having a little bit of a cider tasting for people to peruse through. So we're going to make sure that anyone looking for like a holiday gift giving idea, or, you know, any time of the year, even not even just this time of year, this is a really go-to book. And Hugh, did you know that this just was translated into Japanese?
Yeah, I heard that. That's very good.
Yeah. The cover looks a bit different, too. It has this whole, I'm going to say Japanese-esque kind of feeling to it versus the kind of like the old world type of feeling of the current cover.
I will say, though, about this book, if you do give it to a loved one for Christmas, be careful because they won't speak to you all Christmas. They'll be too busy reading it.
Well said. That's right.
Like I was when I got this book for Christmas a few years ago.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, let's go on to the next book, and I'm going to talk about a little bit of a book here, and I don't think you have it, and actually, since I talked to you, I kind of changed my mind on what I wanted to talk about, because I'd like to give a little bit of kudos to this gentleman. This is a book called Dorset Cider, with an Excursion to the New Forest, and it was written in 2014 by a chap named Alan Stone, and he's from the UK. He self-publishes all his books, and it's through the website Somerset History. And he's a really, you know, kind of deep in the cider jug with so many of the little background things going on. He's a cider writer, he's a cider maker, and he's essentially a historian. And this book here, you know, I was asked by a beer magazine to, like, pick a book that you want to, like, cover, and we'll put it in our newspaper. And so I had picked this a while back this fall. And partially, when I got the cover, it's just the feel of the book itself in your hand. It's that nice kind of small paperback size. It only has 157 pages. But the picture is, it must be the morning when the sun is coming through, like the apple orchard, and it has a silhouette of the trees. And you feel like you just want to dive into the book just as you would want to dive into like a fresh pint of cider port for you. That always pulls me in, the cover. And the photos inside are absolutely amazing. This particular book is divided into three different parts. And the first part begins with an introduction to Dorset. And, well, Hugh, have you been to the UK? Have you done any cider trails like down in like the Somerset region or Hertfordshire?
A little bit into Herefordshire and into Wales, but I'm planning to hopefully next British summer get on my bike and ride through the West Country and stop in as many orchards as I can along the way.
That is the way to go, yeah. So Dorset is an area that we don't typically hear about for cider, and that's down, well, I guess, it, you know, now I'm getting kind of turned around on my world map, but West County, right? So it's a little south of West County. And so Alan Stone begins with the introduction to Dorset, and it's called The Place of Dorset in the Cider History. And what I like about this book is that he is coming from an approach that is very, not really storytelling, but it's kind of like matter of fact. You feel like you're hanging out in the pub with the guy with your sleeves rolled up and your hands a little bit sticky after hanging in the cider mill and just chit-chatting about what's happening in Dorset. And I have a feeling that a lot of the cider makers, they have a very like rural feeling to it. And what he did was, on top of doing the historical piece, the second part is an interview with like 20 individual like cider makers, a complete also with photos. So it's a real, both a labor of love because it's self-published, and it gives you this amazing overview of this region and giving these folks a voice outside of what they might be doing on Facebook or something like that, kind of really puts it out to the world. And then the last part he added in, it's not really part of Dorset, but there's a region of that part of the country called New Forest. I guess it's like a national park. And there's a place called New Forest Cidery. So the third part of the book is an excursion to New Forest Cidery. And it's specific to that cider maker there. And again, it's this like really rural feeling. And man, if I was like on my bike like you are kind of writing about, you just feel like it could roll around in the book, like you're riding your bike through the book here and just grabbing a pint along the way. It's pretty well done. There's a lot, I guess the only little downside is there's a lot of typos. And but at the same time, that kind of lends itself to kind of having this gritty feeling to it. Like you don't want to argue with the guy, even if there's typos in there. It's like, okay, Alan, do whatever you want to do, you know? There's going to be a link in the show notes to this book, Dorset Cider, and that's, again, a self-published book out of Somerset History. And I guess it's 12 pounds, would that be right? That L, 12 pounds or so is the cost of it. And then you have a third book that I don't know about, and I was really excited to hear.
Okay, so this is a new release called Empire of Booze by Henry Jeffries. This is a look at how alcohol and the British Empire went hand in hand and telling the history of both. So it talks about, the first chapter is all about cider and how the British invented a type of glass that could hold pressure. And of course, if you can hold pressure, you can hold the bubbles in and make a method traditional bubbly cider. And talking about how they worked this out before the French did it, and let's say the French perfected it with their champagnes. It goes on to talk about things like how IPA was the style of drink that they could actually use to get to India, hence the name Indian Pale Ale, because it was high in alcohol and high in hops, which acted to preserve the beer on those long trips on the boats between the UK and India. And I'm pretty interested to read this one, so hint, hint if my sister's listening. So the last chapter on this book is called something along the lines of how Britain ruined the Australian wine industry. So be quite interested to see their take on that one. It's only just been released at the start of November.
Oh, okay. And Henry Jeffries, do you know anything about the author? Is this kind of an area that he typically writes about?
I think he's done a few books about history and alcohol. Mm-hmm. He's written five or six books on that topic.
Well, I guess we'll be looking for a little bit of a review on this once you do get it. And what's your sister's name?
Primrose.
Okay, Primrose. You heard it here. Get on the bandwagon so that we could hear a full review on that. You know, that whole story about the IPA, you know, that was really something to think about, because the ships were filled with, they just had like beer ships that went down to the Queen's troops, and it had to go around the Horn of India. And this is how I know the story. And they just loaded it up with hops. And so it was kind of a very, you know, hoppy beer, of course, and it kind of brought in the whole idea that, my goodness, to imagine that they had ships just dedicated for bringing, like, beer down to India is just mind-boggling. Now, I could be wrong about that. Maybe they didn't fully dedicate it to beer, but when you think about keeping the Queen's troops happy, they probably should have dedicated a ship just to beer. I don't think they do that anymore in different countries, but maybe that's something we need to bring back again, hey?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I was going to say that there's one other book that I've just finished reading, which was very good, Craft Cider Making by Andrew Lee.
Mm.
I believe Andrew is an American writer, so I was having to read this book with a conversion table next to me so I could do all the imperial to metric conversions. But that was a lot of help when I was doing my homemade cider a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Yeah, I guess that is a bit of a problem if it's written by, you know, an American versus a Brit or somebody from Australia. You're working with a totally different kind of measurement scene. Yeah, so we could put also a link to that, to the book by Andrew Lee. There's a whole bunch of cider making books out there. One of my favorites is The Art of Cider Making by Paul Carenti. It was published in 1998, I believe, and it really came out of the Cider Fest here called Cider Days that takes place the first weekend of every November. And Paul is, you know, he's still coming, and he's not an old man by any means. And that book is a really nice basic book. And then there's also The New Cider Maker's Handbook by Claude Jacquelaire. And that is kind of like the encyclopedia for cider making. It could be almost too overwhelming for folks. So I think the book that you mentioned by Andrew Lee,
yes,
or Cider Making, Art of Cider Making, is a very approachable book too. I have one other thing too, and maybe you could ask someone else in your little family network there. One of my most favorite things to give folks during this holiday season, and I like gifts that are kind of small and tidy or kind of stocking stuffers, it's a kind of dual thing. It's like a corker for a bottle. So after you've opened the bottle, and say you're out and about, or you're at a festival, or you're walking around, or you've been judging, or you're at a picnic or something, you want to close it, but you can't recork it or cap it, they have these like little bottle cappers, and it tightens down and expands as it goes into the top of the bottle. But the very handle also is a bottle opener. So it has a dual piece there. So what I'm going to do is take a photo of it, and I'll put it in the show notes. And the best part is that it probably costs, well, it, like $1, and I don't know how that translates to an Australian. Do you call it? You don't call it dollar. What do you call it?
About 75.
About 75. Okay.
Yeah, dollars.
All right. Yeah. So it's very, very affordable, and it's a perfect thing as like a little stocking stuffer, and to also just kind of have in your pocket or something as like party favors to folks. So that's one of my favorite gifts. You always kind of lose them, and it's always nice to have in your backpack, for both as a bottle opener and a bottle corker. And when I'm traveling, I always like one too, because I might be at the hotel room, and if I have a big bottle, I might not be drinking all that, unlike some rumors about me. And I might cork it and just, you know, have it there for the week.
I honestly can't remember the last time I had a bottle of wine that had a cork in it.
Really?
They're all screw tops these days here.
Well, you know who you have to thank for that. Do you know who
introduced that?
Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon Vineyard in Santa Cruz. He introduced to the wine world screwed bottle caps, and really set the wine world upside down on their head for that, because it was like, you know, sacré bleu, how can you put a screw cap on something and not cork it? So, yeah. There's a lot of screw caps in Australia now.
Yeah. I think about maybe 15 years ago, there was a bit of a cork shortage. So they invented a rubber plastic cork, but that was very quickly replaced by the screw tops.
Mm-hmm. Do you find a difference?
No. they're just easy and convenient, and they work well.
Right. Well, you know, I think we find the same thing with cans versus bottles and corks versus screw caps. They're just not as sexy, you know, but it doesn't really necessarily impact the flavor so much. But I think there's something, you know, rather beautiful about a corked presentation. And not to take away from the screw cap or Randall Graham or anything like that, or any of the makers doing that, I think we have to work with what we have. But it's kind of, it'll be interesting how it pans out in coming years with what folks are using or not using. And if you don't have the cork, you got to go with the cap.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned cans. That's been a bit of a growth area in the last few years. There's a few craft cider makers who are just starting to release their ciders in cans.
And are they putting that in, like, what size cans? And is it 4-packs or 6-packs?
A 4-pack, and they're normally around 375 mils.
Okay. So that's about the standard here. Although I am seeing, it appears, more cideries packing it in 6-packs, too. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because you're competing against that craft beer market and also trying to, you know, bring those drinkers into the cider scene, too. So I'm not sure what's going to happen in the long run there. Anything else you'd like to say to Ciderville or any upcoming blogs that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so every year since I've had the blog going, I've done a wrap-up of the year and with my best, my favourite ciders of that year. So that will be coming out between Christmas and New Year, so keep an eye out for that one. I've got a couple more quite interesting reviews coming out. You talk about the rock star cider makers. So I reckon there's two schools of famous cider makers in Australia. There's the rock star guys, and then there's the old timers who don't get a lot of publicity, but they've been doing it for longer than anybody else is. So I've got a little review of a Kingston Black single variety cider coming out hopefully next week. So keep an eye out for that one.
Okay, well, I can't wait for that. Do you typically have your cider in pint glasses where you are? How is it served?
It varies state to state. In New South Wales, we have two standard sizes, the midi and the schooner, and sometimes a pint. So a midi is a half pint, and a schooner is a three-quarter pint.
How do you spell midi?
M-I-D-I.
Okay. And a schooner. I love both those words. They sound, well, the schooner is nautical. Is a midi a nautical term too?
I don't know where it's come from. In other states, that could be called a pony or a half pint.
A pony. Wow. I love it. I love it. And this is what it's all about, you know, with cider around the world. It's just kind of connecting all the dots and sharing in the culture. Really cool stuff. Well, it is just a morning on your spot of the world, and you have a sunny day ahead, and all the cider's been bottled at this point, and now in Australia, you're just kind of enjoying it and getting ready for the fall. At some point, I know you're kind of like going into the middle of summer. Is that true?
We're just coming into summer now.
Okay.
Yeah, so just coming into summer, the orchards starting to they've flowered, and the apples are little tiny green dots on the trees at the moment.
And are you going to be having any like January wassail events or? What, or is it just primarily in July that you do your wassailing? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so the wassailing tradition has only it's only just starting to happen here. There's the Tasmanian Midwinter Festival where a few of the people down there have wassailing events. So that's normally early July, so right when it's darkest and coldest down there.
That's, again, hard for me to wrap my mind around because it's hot as anything where I am. So right now, during the summer, are there many cider fests happening?
There will be a few. There's just been a few. There'll be a few more probably late summer. May, there's a couple. A lot of the pubs in Sydney particularly do a showcase day where they'll open up their beer gardens to three or four different producers and put on a barbecue and, yeah, get down there and try a few different producers, different ciders, and, yeah.
Oh.
They'll be coming up probably early in the new year.
Wonderful. Well, a lot's happening in the whole region of Sydney, Tasmania, all throughout Australia, and we look forward to reading more of what you're doing out there with Real Cider Reviews and staying in touch. I'd like to thank you for taking the time today in the early morning. It's about 8:30 a.m. in the morning, your time, and it's about 4:45 p.m. in the U.S. So I'm just starting to close my day here, my work day, and you're just starting to begin. I want to, again, thank you so much for taking the time this morning there and having a chat with me, Hugh McKellar, from Real Cider Reviews.
Thank you very much, Rhea.
Well, I think we just had a little visit from the flip side of Ciderville. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that I'm talking to Hugh, and it was 8 a.m. in the morning, and then 4 p.m. in the afternoon where I am. A big, big world out there filled with a cider. And not only that, you know, it's 35 degrees Celsius or 95 degrees today where he is, and outside my window, there's snow on the ground. Too much fun. I think that there's some great ideas that we discussed in this chat that are perfect for the holiday gift giving, and there is still time to get your orders online and also support some of these cider writers that are really keeping us all informed. Go to episode 59 at ciderchat.com. You'll find the links there. They're also listed on the resource page. And by using any of those links, Cider Chat is an affiliate of Amazon. That means that it brings you into your portal of Amazon, and any purchases you make, there is a small kickback to a Cider Chat, and it costs nothing for you other than that minute to use that link. That's a great way to help keep this chat thriving and at the same time get your holiday shopping done. And what about those little stoppers? You're going to be able to see a photo of them, too, on the episode show notes and also at the resource page. They're really handy-dandy, excellent mini gifts. I put them in the stocking stuffer. I give them as Hanukkah gifts. Oh, yep, they're the way to go. So I hope you check that out. And if you have some great book recommendations, too, please send them my way, and I'll share them with Ciderville. I'd like to give a shout out to the patrons of Cider Chat and to the following commercial cideries who support the Cider Going Up campaign. That is Current Cider of Percocet, Pennsylvania, Big Apple Hard Cider of New York City, Oliver's Cider and Perry of Hertfordshire in the UK, and Santa Cruz Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California, and the Cider Project in Sebastopol, California. If you're a commercial cidery and you'd like to help Cider Chat continue to promote cider around the world, please consider joining in on that campaign today. You could go to the Cider Going Up page at ciderchat.com. Well, Ciderville, it's been another lovely time hanging with you and just being in the cider groove. Enjoying great books to read, sharing a glass, and joining in on a chat. I hope you have a good week ahead. And until then, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!